Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The 21st Annual Yom HaShoah Interfaith Holocaust Commemoration takes place this coming Monday, and this year will feature one of the most important historians and documenters of the Holocaust. Father Patrick Desbois is a Catholic priest and founder of Yahad in Unum, Together in One. Desbois and his organization has interviewed over 5,000 eyewitnesses to Jewish and Roma executions by Nazi mobile units at over 2,000 sites in Eastern Europe. In many cases, he and his team of forensic investigators were the ones that uncovered many of these sites, which were in the process of being lost to history. In the process of finding, commemorating these sites, and interviewing witnesses, Father Desbois uncovered the working methods of the genocide to help prevent further genocides in the future. Desbois says the camps of the Holocaust are unlikely to be repeated. They leave too much evidence. Genocides since World War II more resemble the countless sites he's documented in Poland, Ukraine, and Belarus. He's the author of The Holocaust by Bullets and his latest book, In Broad Daylight, The Secret Procedures Behind the Holocaust by Bullets. Joining me today to preview Father Desbois' appearance is Jacob Howland, a professor of philosophy at the University of Tulsa and member of the Council for Holocaust Education. Father Desbois will be the main guest for the Interfaith Holocaust Commemoration Monday evening at 7 at the TCC Southeast Campus in the Van Treese Pace. Jacob, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Rich.
For this year's Holocaust Commemoration, the Council on for Holocaust Education is bringing in Father Patrick Desbois. For those people who don't know this name, who is Father Patrick Desbois and why is he important?
Father Desbois is the author of a number of books, one of which is called The Holocaust by Bullets, which I had the privilege of discussing in a wonderful reading group organized by the Tulsa City County Library at the Brookside Library. And this book, The Holocaust by Bullets, is the story of Father Desbois' attempt to locate over 1,000 unmarked graves in the Ukraine that contained the remains of roughly 1.5 million Jews who were murdered during the Holocaust by mobile killing squads. And it's an extremely well-written book, and I think it's a historically very important book, and I'm happy to be here today to discuss it a bit with you.
Yeah. One of the things, when people think of the Holocaust, they obviously think of the killing camps, like Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. I think people don't really think of how many Jews and gypsies and others in Eastern Europe were killed by these mobile killing squads. These were roaming from the invasion of Poland, and then later once the Germans invaded the Soviet Union, they followed up right behind the front lines.
Right. And actually, the major killing centers in Poland, of which there were six, the most infamous, of course, being Auschwitz, were locations where, of course, Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, enemies of the state, and so forth, were gassed and incinerated. But prior to that industrial-scale extermination, mobile killing squads called Einsatzgruppen, or deployment groups, were sent out by the Germans into Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union, and in particular Ukraine, to exterminate Jewish communities that had been overrun during the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union. So this started in 1941. And these groups would simply round up all the Jews in a particular area, line them up over pits that the Jews themselves had dug, and machine gun them. And in fact, the death camps, Chelmno, Belzec, Majdanek, Sobibor, Treblinka, and Auschwitz, were established, among other reasons, because the squads had difficulty doing this work. There was a psychological cost, and the Germans decided that, among other things, they needed to have a method that would, believe it or not, exact a smaller toll on their own troops if they were going to, so to speak, solve the Jewish problem in what's now known as the Final Solution.
You know what Father Desbois also talks about in this book is that there were certainly plenty of willing at the beginning of the war to carry this out. And he writes that he was interested in it because his own grandfather, he's French, and his mm-hmm. grandfather had to go to one of these sites at one point and a camp. And that's what interested him in the Holocaust. And once he began investigating these sites, he found that nobody had ever gone back to these sites once the war was over.
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting story. So Father Desbois is French. His family, and in particular this, I believe it was his maternal grandfather, were resistance fighters. His grandfather was imprisoned. He'd been captured fighting in the French resistance against the Nazis, and had been imprisoned in a camp in France, from which he tried to escape three times. The third time he was successful, but he was captured, and they decided to punish him by sending him to a camp in the Ukraine called Rava Ruska. And this was a camp where many Soviet prisoners were interned. Jews had been imprisoned, and there were Italian prisoners there. Most of these people, in case of the Jews, all of them, and I believe also the Soviet prisoners, were ultimately killed. And he wanted to find out more about his grandfather's experience. His grandfather didn't speak about it much. And through a certain set of circumstances, he found himself in Eastern Europe near the location in the Ukraine of Rava Ruska. And it's an interesting story because he tried to locate the camp, and he found that in the town where the camp was located, only a very small memorial, no other evidence of the camp. And he was able to discover that the camp was actually nearby, but that the citizens of the town really didn't want to have anything to do with it and didn't want to even let him know the location of the place. And that sort of led him into the process of trying to uncover these unmarked mass graves throughout Ukraine. And he undertook that project. It's an extremely important historical project of assembling a team to go out and locate these graves. And his book, The Holocaust by Bullets, is the story of that research and what he found.
And there was also another corollary as a part of that early journey. He went to the camps of Belzec, mm-hmm. which really gave him some interesting insight into what the witnesses saw. He said he was at Belzec, and he expected to hear the typical refrain. We had no idea what was going on. And in fact, when he was there, when he talked to witnesses, he said, oh yeah, we remember this. We always remembered our windows were so grimy from all the smoke that was coming up from the incinerators. And what he realized was that instead of people not knowing, they were very much aware. And of course, this is the other part of his research is interviewing witnesses. And that is really the amazing part of it is it's a twofold mission. It's doing forensic anthropology to find the sites and then interviewing the witnesses who witnessed this. And contrary to, I suppose, conventional wisdom, there were plenty of witnesses that survived this.
Yeah. Again, it's estimated that there were, I don't know, between 1,000 and 1,500 unmarked graves in the Ukraine. Now, some of these graves are very well known. The ravine at Babi Yar was found to contain over 100,000 corpses after the Second World War, and the mass grave at Lviv contained roughly 90,000. So Desbois wanted to accomplish two things. He wanted to establish the exact location of these graves so that the dead could be properly memorialized. And he notes in his book that there are memorials in Ukraine to German soldiers. There are memorials to Soviet soldiers, but there were none for the Jews. And the second thing, which you mentioned, Rich, which is really the remarkable part about this book, is to find and interview eyewitnesses to the killings and to record their testimony. Now, one of the fascinating things, and I've already touched on it in remarking about the fact that inhabitants of the region of this camp, Rava Ruska, didn't even want to indicate where the remains of the camp were. There were still some broken down surviving buildings there, is that people were not forthcoming. And they didn't want to share their information with him about what had happened in these locations. And that's a very interesting part of the story, and I perhaps should say a little bit about why that was the case. Because one thing I think we need to know or need to understand is that the witnesses that he was interviewing, and he's doing this in the early 2000s in Ukraine, were children at the time of these mass killings, 1941, 1942. And they were, let's say, 10 years old. And that means they were survivors of some terrible events that had taken place in the Ukraine. After the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia in 1917, a number of changes occurred. And one thing that happened is that there was punitive food requisitioning in the years 1921 and 1922 under Lenin. There were poor harvests in the Ukraine and food was taken from that region, and roughly 1 million people died at that time. 10 years later, around 5 million people died under Stalin in Ukraine when famine was used as a weapon. The Ukrainians call this the Holodomor. So, number one, the young people who were now old in the early 2000s when Father Desbois was interviewing them were survivors of some of the worst recorded famines in history. They were also survivors of the Soviet regime. And one of the fascinating things, at least I found in reading the book, is that some of the older folks needed to be convinced by their daughters or sons or what have you to speak to Father Desbois, because they were afraid that if they spoke about the events of 1941 and 42, the killing of the Jews, that they might in fact be arrested. Some of them seem to have been under the impression that the Soviet Union was still in existence, and they might be sent off to the Gulag. So what I see here is the inculcated habits of deliberate forgetting, a sort of cultural forgetfulness, but also fear. In the Soviet Union, you just didn't talk about terrible things that happened. You didn't speak about the people you knew who were sent to the camps. You deliberately concealed the truth. And those attitudes were so ingrained that he was met basically with silence until he figured out a way to get people to talk to him.
And that way was?
He assembled an excellent team. There was one young woman, Ukrainian, that came with him who had a wonderful manner, and she was simply able to approach people and to get them to talk to him. And I think that was really the major component. But I should also mention there were other members of his team. If you're going to locate mass graves, it turns out that if you have somebody who knows how to use a metal detector, then they will be able to locate spent cartridges. And Father Desbois realized that where you find a number of spent cartridges, you find corpses, you find a grave. He had photographers. He had anthropologists who were able to assess the bones that they found and the kinds of injuries that people would have suffered. I'm most impressed at the remarkable sensitivity that Father Desbois shows in dealing with the Ukrainians and with the Jewish communities. And this is another reason why I think he got people to talk to him.
No, I think this is one of the most interesting stories, is when he first started searching out these graves, Jewish authorities were rightly concerned. They said, what is the purpose of this? And, you know, I guess some sense of if anybody's going to be looking into this, it ought to be Jews, not a Catholic priest. In fact, correct me if I'm wrong, but Jewish authorities had basically declared every one of the massacre sites as holy sites, and that the people who died as a Jewish version of a saint, if you will. I think that's how Father Desbois would put it. Mm-hmm. And that they shouldn't be touched in any way. And what he was able to prove to them was that, in fact, these sites had been desecrated many times, people looking for gold fillings left over, all sorts of, you know, horrible reasons to disturb the grave, and it was best to get an accounting. And he actually got the cooperation of all the Jewish authorities.
Yeah, that's right. Now, one of the interesting things that we learn in the book is that Father Desbois put in a great deal of effort in educating himself about Jewish tradition. He studied in Israel something like 8 years in a row, going to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust memorial in Israel, studying Hebrew. And in France, he was appointed as one of the leading Catholic sort of emissaries to the Jewish community in France. And so he's very well educated about Jewish life, Jewish law, Jewish language, Hebrew. And in fact, just a sort of very small touch that shows how sensitive he is. Chapter 18 of this book is called He Who Saves a Single Life Saves a Whole World. And that's a phrase from the Talmud. What's interesting is that Hebrew letters also have a numerical value. And the Hebrew word chai is the word for life. And the numerical value of life is 18. So in any case, he's extremely sensitive. And going back to your point about the graves, so Jewish law requires that the graves of these executed individuals essentially not be disturbed. And as you mentioned, a number of these grave sites had been looted. In one instance, Father Desbois talks about a grave that had not been looted, And with the cooperation of the Jewish authorities, he paved over the grave so that it couldn't be in the future. But the other thing is that I'm really impressed by the sort of deep faithfulness and decency of Father Desbois. So, for instance, at one of the grave sites, Ukrainian farmers were accustomed to lead their cattle across this field. Maybe there was a stream there that they needed to get water from or something. And Father Desbois worked out a way so that these farmers could continue to lead their animals and use that land without disturbing the graves. Another thing that allowed him to get the cooperation and trust of the people in these little villages was his connections with both the Eastern Orthodox and Catholic Church in the Ukraine. So we're dealing with an older population, and this is a religious population, and he would get the priests to announce, say, on a Sunday at a mass or something like this, that Father Desbois was in town, and it would be very helpful if folks would cooperate. So I think that his being a priest, his background of study, particularly in the area of Judaism, and his connections all helped him to undertake what really is historically extremely important work.
My guest today is Jacob Hallen. He's a professor of philosophy at the University of Tulsa and a member of the Council for Holocaust Education. Father Patrick Desbois will be the guest of the 21st Annual Yom HaShoah Interfaith Holocaust Commemoration coming up on Monday. It'll be at 7 o'clock at the TCC Southeast Campus. And we should mention, we actually tried to talk to Father Desbois. He was actually interviewing a witness in, we think it's somewhere in central Poland, and the phone line was just not broadcast quality. So we brought Jacob in to talk about this remarkable gentleman who is still to this day continuing to interview witnesses. And this is the other point that I think is really important about the Holocaust by bullets, which led to the death of over a million Jews in Eastern Poland and the Ukraine and Belarus, is that we think of even these mass grave sites as being like Baba Yar, a ravine in the middle of nowhere. What became very apparent to Father Desbois was the Einsatzgruppen really very quickly ran out of the patients to move it out of sight. Many times it would be in the village park, in the village square. They would round these people up and do it right in front of the whole town, which, again, belies this idea of everything happening in secret, that there are witnesses, and he has been very remarkable in having them tell their stories. And what he's been able to gather is that, in some cases, this was a very much a freelance operation, but with the German efficiency, when it came to anything having to do with the Jewish laws, there was a set procedure that they would go about.
Yeah, and you know, these were massive operations. The Holocaust often contains very strange and paradoxical and contradictory facts. So yes, I mean, in one town, they executed Jews right in the middle of the town, and one of the graves was under somebody's garden right next to the road. That person was not eager for Father Desbois to do his research. I think he felt it would disturb his tomatoes or something. But at the same time as these events were taking place in full sight of the inhabitants, the Nazis were concerned to somehow cover up the traces of what they'd done. So there was an infamous operation called Operation 1005 that ran from 1942 to 1944. And that operation was an attempt to exhume all of the bodies from these mass graves and burn them. For two purposes, actually. One was to achieve a precise count of the number of people they had managed to murder. And the other was to simply dispose of the evidence in advance of the Soviets retaking that part of the Soviet Union, re-entering Ukraine. You see, the Battle of Stalingrad, the decisive battle of the war, had concluded in February of 1943, and the writing was on the wall for the Germans. But so these were very large operations. And in the book, he interviews people, as I said, who were children at the time. And what would happen is the German soldiers would come into the town and they would requisition children as laborers. And I want to read you a very short passage in which he talks about the work that these children did. There were those who mixed lime with the blood of the Jews, those who tied the Jews' clothes up in bundles and then loaded them onto carts, those who patched up the clothes, those who prepared food for the oppressors during the executions, who drove carts full of hemp or sunflowers with which to burn the bodies, those who placed sunflower or hemp on the layers of the bodies, those who tore out the Jews' gold teeth while they awaited their execution, those who transported Jews in their carts from the village of the pits, those who stored the spades in their house at night between shootings, those who packed down the bodies of the Jews in the pits and covered them with sand between shootings, those who surrounded the groups of Jews who arrived at the pit until all the families were shot, those who guarded the Jews to prevent them from escaping, and those who brought ash to clean up the ground after the executions. Most of them were children.
Mm. There was one especially chilling part, which is they would designate one or two children to count the bodies, and those would inevitably be shot as they left town.
Yes, and you can imagine the fear and terror of the parents of these children who had been requisitioned. They didn't know if their children were going to survive. In addition, they would take boys, 15, 16 years old, give them a rifle, and say, guard these Jews. And if any of them escape, we shoot you. So this was terrible pressure. One other thing I need to say is that Father Desbois doesn't judge the people he interviews. He's actually been criticized for not doing so. But I think he's right. He wants to get information. And given the horrors that these people lived through, that they survived in the Soviet Union, that they were subjected to by the Nazis, and even given the fact that perhaps some of their relatives were interested in looting the property of the Jews, even given that fact, I don't think that he should be judging these adults who were children at the time that this occurred. And he doesn't. And that, to me, shows a kind of respect for their experiences that any good historian needs to demonstrate in a circumstance like this.
And I imagine he's often asked why you would do this. Why, we know the Holocaust occurred. We know the approximate numbers. Why is it important to document every witness's story? And he has a very interesting answer to this, because we talked about this in our conversation, and he said, this is how genocide has happened ever since the Second World War. If you create a big camp, there's way too much evidence, and you will be prosecuted for war crimes at some point. He said every genocide since then has involved this method: coming to a place, lining up the people that you, the other, for whatever, wherever that is, shooting them, digging a grave, mass grave, and covering them up. He says the more we learn about that, the more we learn about the processes behind it, and the more we can perhaps prevent it, which is really the goal of his organization, Yahad in Unum, mm-hmm. which is together in one, which mm-hmm. combines Hebrew and Latin for obviously the Catholic Church and the Jewish faith.
Yeah, and I think he believes religiously it's important to memorialize the dead. These are the sites where they fell. It's important. It's actually important for the Ukrainians that he's interviewing, who have kept these stories bottled up for so many years, and speak to him in trepidation, but with a real sense of relief, I think, when they can get this off their chest. And as you say, after the Second World War, for example, under the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, it was this kind of procedure. You get people together, you shoot them. It's pretty straightforward, low technology, and it has the advantage that you mentioned of being easy to cover up. And, I think we're very, very lucky to have Father Desbois here. A number of years ago for the Yom HaShoah commemoration, we had the historian Martin Gilbert, very great historian, biographer of Churchill. And I would say that Father Desbois is, from the point of view of history, his book, The Holocaust by Bullets, is comparable, or at least in that league of Sir Martin Gilbert as a historical accomplishment. But as I say, he demonstrates such humanity and such love and such care for the truth, which I think is extremely important. We're very, very privileged to have him as our speaker this year.
And we should mention that his organization is not just about documenting the Holocaust of the Jews, but he's also done a lot of important work in the most recent years in documenting the genocide against the Roma, gypsies, mm-hmm. of which very few people have really taken the sort of effort that he has done, like he's done in Eastern Europe, to document the destruction of the Roma in Eastern Europe, as well as in the current day, he's been documenting the genocide of the Yazidis, which is a monotheistic minority in northern Iraq, which combines several different Zoroastrianism, Christianity, Islam, and a variety of religions in their practice, but they've been systematically been forced to either convert to Islam by ISIS or Daesh. People have occupied their homelands, and this is a genocide that most of us are completely unaware of, and his organization is working to bring that to light.
That's extremely important work, yeah. And, you know, it's really quite amazing because we speak about the Holocaust, and most people are familiar with the figure of 6 million Jews. If we want to expand and talk about the actual number of deaths of non-combatants perpetrated by the Nazis, there are over 17 million total victims. For example, 5.7 million, roughly, Soviet civilians were killed, and around 3 million Soviet prisoners of war were killed. These are people who were captured by the Nazis and died in prison camps for the most part. For example, at Ravaruska, 18,000 Soviet prisoners of war were executed by the Nazis. So something like 5 million prisoners of war were captured from the Soviet army, and 60% of them died in the hands of the Germans. As a sad footnote, those who survived were then invariably sent to the Gulag when they got back to the Soviet Union, because Stalin felt that any good Soviet soldier would not have surrendered.
Well, it will be a very interesting talk that Father Desbois gives. Is that the main event for the commemoration, the evening event, Monday evening, or will there be other things as well?
Well, that's the main event, and there will be, he will speak. There will also be a reading of Yevgeny Yevtushenko's poem, Baba Yar. I believe there will be a musical component, a candle lighting, and of course the wonderful display of student artwork pertaining to the Holocaust and to the theme of this particular talk this year. So I encourage everybody to come out to the evening's events. I think it's going to be quite special.
Jacob, thanks for filling us in on Father Desbois. It should be a very interesting evening and very enlightening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rich.
Jacob Howland is a professor of philosophy at the University of Tulsa and a member of the Council for Holocaust Education, previewing the visit by Father Patrick Desbois, author of The Holocaust by Bullets and In Broad Daylight. He'll be the guest of the 21st Annual Yom HaShoah Interfaith Holocaust Commemoration coming up Monday evening at 7 o'clock at the TCC Southeast Campus in the Van Trees Pace. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own, do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.